Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up? What's happening? Welcome in on a Monday to The Hoffman Show. It's the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We're streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. Hey, Internet. Anthony, say hi, Internet. Yeah, he's waving. Now say hi to the radio audience with your voice.
Hey, what's up, Murray?
All right. It's us. We're here. You know, we're going to do a lot of NBA Finals stuff today. We're going to talk about this kind of crazy Desmond Bane trade that happened over the weekend. Not just, like, we're not going to do a big Orlando Magic breakdown, but we're going to talk about like kind of what it means in the larger context of the NBA. Tim Bonteps will talk about both of those with us coming up at 5 o'clock from ESPN. We'll also do a little Commanders at 5:30. John Keim wrote an article on something I've been thinking about anyway, which is always nice. John and I don't even think talked about this one. Sometimes we're talking about stuff, and then one of the folks that writes will write something. I'm like, oh, I guess I was a trial balloon for that article. This wasn't one of those. John just wrote about the Commanders' D-line. Or we could do Linnell's show from Friday, Anthony, because he left his rundown up. Segment one.
Is this the Laramie Tunsil stuff?
No. Segment one, this. Segment two, that. Segment three, this. It's all laid out. It's 12 segments. That's what we got on our show. So we could.
I mean, you might have something good on there.
Fortunately or unfortunately, I had to close out of his notes to get over to my profile in the computer here. So we are going to go ahead and do our show. I will say, the last thing I'll mention on our show, 6 o'clock today, Toby Altizer is going to join us. These Davey Martinez comments. Ooh, buddy. They're not good. Not good, Davey. I kind of want to do more on him. The more I think about it, the more I'm like, should we just start there? No, we're going to start with the NBA Finals, which are now tied at 2. They resume tonight with Game 5. Obviously, a critically important game. There are only 3 games left at max. They're all critically important. What's at stake tonight? It's Game 5 of the NBA Finals, and it's tied at 2. What, you need me to explain this to you like you're 5? No, it's Game 5 of the NBA Finals, and before we get to Game 5, just looking to look back at Game 4 and some of the interesting things. And I feel like that was a perfectly fitting game for the series, Anthony, in that it was really, really close. It felt like for long stretches, one team was playing better. But then you look at the score and you're like, that's not as big as it should be in terms of the deficit. And I think that was the weird thing was Oklahoma City ultimately hit 3 threes in the entire game. And it felt like they couldn't do a whole lot offensively. It felt like Indiana was dominating. That building was on fire. And then I looked out at the scoreboard, and Indy's leading by like 2 or 3. And obviously, they had the stretch in the third quarter where they got it up to 10. But that felt like it should have been 20 based on how the rest of the game had gone. And I think that's the thing that's kind of wild about this series is these two teams are both fairly evenly matched and stylistically matched. That it just feels like no team, except for Oklahoma City in Game 2, where Indiana couldn't hit anything, and they cranked the defense all the way up. It just feels like neither team can have these huge runs that we see in NBA games, and that's what you want in the finals, right? What makes regular season basketball is teams will make these huge runs, and like you can be close and kind of play it pretty even for 40 minutes, but eventually, one team's going to make a run the other team doesn't really respond from, and then you get some pretty wide margins, and that's that. If your team can stack a couple of mini runs together, and all of a sudden, it's a 20-point win. I mean, and even in Game 2, we talked about this. Like, Oklahoma City went on one run in the second quarter. It was a 17-2 run, which is forever for some reason apparently seared into my brain. But they went into the 17-2 run, and they wound up winning by 16. They were dead even for the other 43 minutes of the game. It was this five-ish minute, maybe it was longer than that, I have to go back and check, but five-ish minute, 17-2 run in the second quarter. And other than that, they're mostly trading baskets. The lead never ballooned up to 25. It never got down below like 12. It was just kind of in that like 13-20 type of range in a game you win by like 15 points. And so I think that's the like what this series was the other night too, is Indiana feels like they're making a couple of extra plays, but then have a turnover and OKC would get a run out. And okay, well now all of a sudden it's back to a 4-point game. And Indiana's inability to pull away despite feeling like they were playing better left them vulnerable. And then you get the chaos at the end, which I know is part of what you want to talk about, is the potentially Scott Foster-induced chaos at the end. But what do you think about the non-Foster minutes, if you will?
I mean, I think the point you just made in terms of, you know, Indiana not capitalizing on the moments in the games, the end of the third and even the start of the fourth, those shots that you get, like, usually we're seeing them hit these shots because they're not as tired. They, you know, they still got their legs and stuff, you know, under them, and they're capable to, you know, be in rhythm and hit those shots. But missing wide open shots, like looks that you rarely even get against a team like Oklahoma City, just because of how defensively sound they are, like, you got to capitalize on those moments. And they failed to do that. But also also salute to the Thunder, you know, for sticking with, you know, things and persevering, trying to just keep the game close. Because again, I felt as though the Pacers had a lot of the momentum. They had the home crowd behind them. They were winning. They had a lead, and it seemed to me that, you know, this game was gonna, you know, they were gonna keep it fairly close, and then, you know, the Pacers were gonna pull away in the end. And every time, you know, the Thunder just kept, you know, chipping away. And Shea, he finally got it going a little bit. You know, he started getting to the free throw line. And I think that's more so like how the Thunder, you know, operate. Like, once their fearless leader gets going,
yeah,
because I think he only had 14 points like halfway through the third or something like that. And then after
he definitely got going late. He definitely got going at the free throw line. But I think like the first quarter is a great example of this, right? I think Siakam had five steals in the first quarter.
Yeah.
Whatever the number was. I know he had five for most of the game. And there was the great stat they had, like, you know, ninth player in finals history to have like 20 points, five rebounds, five assists, five steals, whatever the combo of stuff was. But it was 20 points and five steals were like kind of like the big ones. And he's got all these steals. Halliburton comes out pretty aggressive. He's got like four or five assists in the first quarter. Siakam's aggressive. They're hitting shots. They're doing all this stuff. Their defense is, you know, they're pressing. Shea's not even bringing the ball up. He's not even bothering. He's barely involved at all offensively. The score at the end of the first quarter was 35-34 Indiana. And you're just like, man, that's a lot of effort and a lot of stuff that's gone right for you to be up by a point. And there's been points in the series where it's felt the other way, where OKC's feels like they're forcing them. I mean, game one, OKC forced a billion turnovers, and, you know, all of a sudden Indiana's kind of floating around. You're like, what are you doing here? Why are you still floating around? Don't you know how this goes? This is Oklahoma City Thunder. They win by double digits every game. It's what they do. Next thing you know, Tyrese Halliburton hits a shot with 0.3 seconds to go, gives Indiana their first and only lead of the game, but it's the only one that mattered because it was the final score. And that's been this series. And so we can get into, we will in a second, some of the stuff that happens late in this game. But ultimately, I think Indiana loses it by not taking advantage of, you know, Obi Toppin has a really nice night. Siakam's got a great night. Halliburton is a little bit, I think they need more from him scoring-wise, as we've talked about, but has generally a pretty solid day. But at the end of the third quarter, they started to miss a bunch of shots, like open shots. Miles Turner is probably the worst. Like, he's 0 of 6 from 3 in this game, and they miss some shots. Siakam misses, you know, there's like a challenge 3 that he has, but one that he's been hitting. You know, Halliburton misses a couple. Like, you just start missing some shots. And then, fourth quarter, Oklahoma City turns the defense up to a million, and then things get crazy at the end. That's where we'll go next. We'll talk about the ending, all the officiating stuff that everyone's whining about. I will tell you now, I don't think it's as valid as some others, but I'm willing to hear arguments. 301-230-0980 if you want to get in on the discussion. And we're talking NBA Finals with you here on The Hoffman Show.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. YouTube, you can watch us live streaming every single day, all 3 hours. NBA Finals Game 5 tonight. Talking about Game 4 now, which was an Oklahoma City win, thanks in large part to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Also the defense of Lu Dort. Good gracious what he did to Halliburton there in the second half, especially. That contributes to the series being tied at 2, going back to OKC. But, Anthony, as tends to happen when Scott Foster officiates an NBA Finals game, people want to talk about Scott Foster. Now, I will be honest with the audience, as I was with you. I, in a stunning turn of events, did not watch the full game Friday night because it went late. And, well, you'd be like, come on, Craig, on a Friday night, you're really not staying up to watch an NBA Finals game on a Finals that is awesome that you really are interested in and into? I coach a very early class on Saturday morning. I didn't get to make that decision. It's just when we could do it. And so I actually wake up earlier on Saturdays than I do during the week. Benefits of having a 4 p.m. show in the afternoon. So, yeah, I didn't watch this game, the second half of this game. Well, I obviously knew what happened all weekend. I actually didn't watch the game until this morning. And I was in the middle of like the third quarter and we were texting and you're like, man, Scott Foster. And I'm like, I ain't seen anything yet. Keep watching. You know, I'm pretty deep into it before I'm like, this might be what people are talking about. What's the beef with Scott Foster in this game? I want to hear it from you. I heard a little bit in Bill Simmons and Zach Lowe's recap pod. What some of Bill's gripes were, but
so Bill was upset too.
Yeah, Bill Simmons, that's his jam. He loves to complain about, especially Scott Foster. But and often I agree. To be fair, this one didn't seem as egregious to me. But there were some things. What you look at the end of this game and the officiating. What made you so and the internet so irate?
I mean, again, like. Everything seemed to be trending towards a Pacers win. They had a huge lead in the fourth. Granted, they weren't hitting their shots. But in order to, like, make it close, Shai finally started getting to the free throw line. Craig, through 2.5 quarters, Shai had 0 free throw attempts. I was so surprised. I'm like, and I had texted Zaire because he was at the game. Mm-hmm. I'm like, Shai, he hasn't shot a free throw this entire, like, game. They're allowing the guys to play. And then next thing you know, here comes Shai, you know, getting all these calls. And, you know, granted, some of them were fouls, but I feel like the one against Lu Dort, when he gets a steal on Tyrese Haliburton, he clearly pushes Tyrese. And you probably haven't seen the angle, but the angle that I saw, he clearly pushes him. And it's a foul in my eyes, but they don't call it. And then at the end of the game, Shai pushes off, he travels, and then he also, you know, makes the shot. So I think two big plays in the game that go against Indiana that goes in the Thunder favor. And it's just, you know, it just every time Scott Foster's in one of these situations, it always ends up bad for, you know, whatever team is, you know, winning or, you know, I don't know. He always seems to, you know, make the game or the series that much closer because of his impact on the game. That's my beef with him.
So I will say in the first half, when they called that foul, the flagrant on
Obi Toppin.
Obi Toppin.
Yeah, come on, dude.
That was an egregiously bad call.
That wasn't a flagrant, right?
No.
Okay, just making sure.
I'm actually watching because I went to X and searched, or went to Twitter and searched. I was like, Lou Dort fouls Scott Foster. And there's actually nothing that pops up. But that popped back up, and I was reminded how egregious that one. And I love that he got on the PA and was like, there's a clear wind-up and follow-through. And I'm like, there's clearly neither. There's no wind-up, and then there's a play on the ball, which I realize is not inherently, you know, a yes or no. But there's a play on the ball. There's a huge body foul. It's just it's very stupid. Very, very bad call. But the SGA push-off one, like, I don't know. Let me see. That's a foul on Dort. That's a bad miss. But, you know, it's also his hands are kind of on him versus like some huge push. I don't think that one's insane. It's a bad, it's a missed call. It's bad. The SGA one, it's a push off. Yes. It's also a hand check on Neesmith. And depending on what you define as the gather, it's not a walk. So I could see where you'd be like, yeah, that was a walk because he's trying to gather himself as opposed to the gather, which is like an official term in the NBA rule book. And that one just doesn't bother me. That one's kind of playoff basketball. I think the valid gripes with the game are the inconsistency from beginning to end in terms of what was allowed, where you were allowing certain stuff earlier. Now you're calling some more touch fouls. There's a ton of free throws in the game. But I also just think like the game got more physical as it went. And I don't look at a ton of those calls. Like, yeah, those are two ones that you want to call the missed calls. Fine. But like, how many of the times the SGA went to the line were they incorrectly called? Neesmith kept fouling him. Stop fouling him. Like that. The what changed wasn't that Scott Foster decided it was time to call fouls. What changed is the Oklahoma City Thunder went to a small pick and roll, got Andrew Nembhard off of SGA finally. For some reason, SGA is perfectly fine going against Aaron Neesmith, who, by the way, remember in the last round, Neesmith murdered Jalen Brunson. Like that was the end of the Knicks. Neesmith on Brunson. This round, it's Nembhard on SGA. Different guys like different styles. The long friendship of Nembhard and SGA, probably something where SGA or Nembhard knows all SGA's moves. Like whatever. Whatever the reason is, that's what changed. The game changed. I don't think there was like this huge officiating change. Things were physical. It's a finals game. They called enough to keep it under control. Neesmith couldn't keep his hands out of the freaking cookie jar. He fouled out because he committed fouls. And that's why SGA kept going to the free throw line. The play's late. Like Mathurin, I hate that those calls happen, but they're fouls. Like that's why Mathurin doesn't close games for them. He's only in there because Neesmith fouls out. And so if all you want to do is look at the stats and be like, this is crazy, I would tell you you needed to watch the game. Because I as a neutral observer watching that game, never once went, oh, Scott Foster's ruining it. And I think he called stuff both ways. So it's not like he tilted the officiating obscenely one way or the other. In OKC turned their defense up. Indiana stopped hitting shots. Oklahoma City found something offensively with the small pick and roll. And they won the game. That's, to me, that's what happened.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, it's just interesting that Scott Foster is always at the center of a lot of these, you know, game discussions and calls. Like he's the common denominator in a lot of it. And in a game again where it seemed like Indy was gonna go up 3-1.
But like, why did they not? Was it because Scott Foster started calling?
Now you necessarily can't just blame him, but
then what are we saying?
I just think he had a hand in it.
Scott Foster calls a lot of big games because he is, by the NBA system, graded out as a very good official. He also will make sure things don't get out of hand. Certainly, he has had some games where you're like, what in the world are you doing, man? Where like Scott Foster likes attention too much to be a referee.
Yeah.
He likes to be involved in the action. He calls a lot of fouls. He's a very tight, like, he loves to be super Oh, we got a block, and it's right there, and it's on the floor. You're like, bro, you are not trying to do
it. He looked excited when Nemhart fouled SGA on the shoulder. He, all right, bro, not like, too much.
But he's all, he leaves very little. I think players actually appreciate it because he is very decisive. He's very clear. He communicates a lot with players. Look, I'm not going to be like, I hate, let me say this very clearly. I hate that I'm defending Scott Foster, right? Scott Foster has a history of whatever, right? He's been involved in a lot of controversial calls and games. And part of that is because he's calling a lot of games as the head guy. And so he's in a position to do that. Was this game changed dramatically from an Indiana win to an Oklahoma City win by Scott Foster doing anything other than his job or doing something outside of his job? No. He called foul, like him calling fouls that Indiana committed is about what Indiana did, not what Scott Foster did.
Yeah.
It's not Scott Foster's job to save the game for Indiana when they stop moving their feet and start grabbing onto SGA. Like, that's just, it's not how it goes. So, did they miss a couple? Sure. Did they probably miss a couple the other way at some point in the game? Probably. Did it seem like there was something untoward happening to me? No. But how the game is officiated definitely matters. The one thing that Simmons said that I thought was correct in terms of how Scott Foster truly impacted the game was because they called a bunch of ticky-tack fouls towards the end, or they seemingly called a bunch of stuff, the game lacked flow. When the game flows, that's in Indiana's favor. But again, I don't think that it was so far out of bounds or that they changed so much that it's something to talk about. I think there were a lot of fouls that happened later in the game as guys got tired in an intense game four where there's so much on the line. And Indiana, if they had kept their hands out of the cookie jar, maybe the game would have had more flow and maybe they would have won anyway. Indiana, by the way, undefeated, I think it is, in the playoffs, like 20, or, you know, I guess it would be 20, but it would be like 12 wins when they score over 110 points. 0-6 when they don't. So, flow, pace, those things matter to Indiana. But also, you know, you score more than 110 points, hit more shots, which they failed to do as well. All right, it's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. When we get back, we'll discuss the other big story of the NBA weekend. Desmond Bane traded for how many picks? Why? Although at first I was like, this is a joke. I actually think it kind of makes sense. We'll get into it next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.